I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE, which hosted the joint condemnation of Trump's ambassador to Israel amidst what may be looming war, or by now total war, in this region. The United States, in coordination with NATO nations, has assembled the largest military buildup since the 2003 invasion of Iraq, to the tune of billions spent by the people of the USA. This is tomorrow. The US assumes the rotating presidency of the Security Council of a beleaguered United Nations, whose reputation is in tatters after Gaza and Trump's kidnapping of the president of the country with the largest known oil reserves on earth, Venezuela. Iran, for its part, has repeatedly sought negotiations with the USA, even as Trump only recently bombed Iran and stands accused of being nothing but an Israeli bankrolled puppet of Netanyahu's. Joining me again from Tel Aviv is Professor Emeritus of International Relations at the University of Haifa, Uri Bar-Joseph. His latest book is Beyond the Iron Wall, The Fatal Flaw in Israel National Security, and the film of his book, The Angel, the Egyptian Spy Who Saved Israel, is on Netflix. Thank you, Professor, for coming back on the show. I mean, the war may have, started, but given Israel's global isolation over the genocide, Narendra Modi visiting Israel, a sign that there's life in relations with Netanyahu and the rest of the world yet. The global south, the new BRICS world, hasn't abandoned Netanyahu.
Well, it's difficult to say, and for Israel, the most important thing is still saving the relations with the United States, of course, and with the European countries. With all due respect to India, India might be a partner, but it's not a substitute to the United States or something like this.
I want to get on to the more focused issues, but since I mentioned India, I mean, the international north-south transport corridor is Mumbai, Bandar Abbas, to Astrakhan in Russia. A surprise that India seems to be taking this line just ahead of a possible war on Iran?
I don't know. Probably the visit had been scheduled for quite a long time, and maybe it's an indication that both in India and in Israel, they know that the war won't start in the coming few days, but I really don't know.
Now, you've been saying for a long time that we need the parochial, as you put it, lens of Netanyahu personally to understand conflict in this region. Just tell me a little bit about that. Why do we have to understand this one man to understand what could be a cataclysmic catastrophe in this area?
Well, we have to make a distinction between Netanyahu until his trial, you know, that he faces now a trial. He's in court now. And since he got into this legal problems, his whole policy changed according to not to Israel's national interest, but more than that, according to Netanyahu's personal interest. And his main interest now is to maintain his government, his coalition. And he has a very right-wing, extreme right-wing coalition. And in a way, he is captured by the most extreme right-wingers in Israel today. Without them, he won't have the government, and he doesn't want to go to elections yet. So I think that we have to understand his personal situation, his personal needs, his personal troubles, in order to understand where Israel go to. Because until 10 years ago, Netanyahu was a right-winger, but a moderate right-winger, and he tried to avoid all-time conflicts, military conflicts. But during the last 3 years, his government now is a little bit more than 3 years, he is far more eager, especially since October 7th, to use force, military force. And we see it in the way that he tried to encourage President Trump to launch war against Iran when they had the seventh meeting about 2-3 weeks ago.
So Professor, just let me get this straight. He's willing to sacrifice Israel itself, given the power of those hypersonic missiles that Iran says it has, the new Verba shoulder-fired missile launchers, supersonic airship cruise missiles from China. He's ready to sacrifice the existence of Israel for his own personal freedom because he doesn't want to go to jail for corruption.
I want, first of all, we have to make a distinction between what he has in his mind and what we see from outside. I believe that in his mind, in Netanyahu's mind, he perceives himself as the savior of Israel, as the one who will be able to get rid of the most extreme threat to Israel, which is Iran or the present regime in Iran. So he makes his own justifications. Maybe he understands or he takes into consideration that it is also because of his personal needs. But as you know, everyone, every leader has his own justifications for whatever policy he pursues. I don't think that we speak about an existential threat to Israel with all these Iranian missiles and arms. I think that Israel might be damaged. We don't know how much, but it won't be the, you know, it's not the fate of Israel after all. It might be a very unpleasant war, but not the end of Israel or the fate of Israel.
I mean, 12 days of war, Israeli media saying, what, up to $20 billion lost because of those hypersonic successful missile attacks. What does Netanyahu mean by a force they cannot imagine as far as retaliation to Iran's retaliation for any Trump airstrikes? What does he mean? Nuclear weapon use on Iran?
If it's unimaginable, I cannot imagine myself what it
is. You have more imagination than Netanyahu.
But we saw what the Israeli Air Force, mainly the Israeli Air Force, did in the 12 days war. The damage to Israel was, I mean, we were about 30, 34 Iranian missiles hit Israel out of the hundreds that were launched or they tried to launch. The damage was quite heavy. Each of them caused damage. I don't think that if we suffer similar damage or even a greater damage in this war, if it comes, it will still be bearable. The question is mainly, in my mind, whether Hezbollah will join the war or not, because the Hezbollah missile arsenal is in a way bigger and more threatening, even at its current stage, than the Iranian arsenal, because Hezbollah has, even after everything that Israel destroyed, probably they have something like 20, 30, 40,000 missiles left, out of which I don't know how many hundreds or thousands can reach Tel Aviv. And this is a major threat to Israel. If Hezbollah joins, it will be a whole different game.
Yeah, I might get to the Lebanese dimension in a second, but it's the Iranian hypersonic missiles that your anti-aircraft defenses don't have any power to stop, surely. That's the main problem. I mean, you saw the reports that Israeli intelligence was begging Trump not to start the war earlier this year because Israel just wasn't ready. There wasn't enough anti-aircraft artillery.
Yeah, we know that the stock of Israeli anti-missile, anti-ballistic missile arms is far smaller now because they used a lot of it during the last 2 years. But this is what we know. We also know that the Americans brought quite a lot of arms to ships and everything to this region, partly in order to defend Israel against Iranian missiles. And I believe that if the Iranians start launching missiles against Israel, probably immediately the Israeli Air Force will join the war and the combination of American Air Force and the Israeli Air Force is by far greater than the force of the Israeli Air Force alone in the 12-day war, because the Americans only made one bombing and that's it. This case, here we have two very large air forces, and I believe that they'll be able to limit and destroy quite a lot of launchers and missiles on the Iranian side before they arrive, before they reach Israel. So there is a threat.
Yeah, if we ignore the environmental destruction, of course, there still lies this threat to the impoverishment of lives all around the world because of the economic impact of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. Ari Ben-Menashe was on this show. He was the source for Sy Hirsch's The Samson Option, related to the use of nuclear weapons by Israel. I don't know whether you caught it. He said that Netanyahu is blackmailing Trump with the Epstein files because Trump was elected on a no new war platform. What do you think?
Sounds a little bit too far for me. I don't think that Netanyahu will blackmail Trump. It is too dangerous for him, too dangerous for Israel. We know that there are disagreements in the American side, I mean, with regard to whether to go to war or not to go to war. It doesn't sound like Trump is blackmailed, and my guess, I mean, we heard about the Russians blackmailing Trump, you know, when he was elected in 2016. You remember for what?
I think we established that was a famous hoax, wasn't it? I mean, it has to be said, the FT is saying that there just isn't enough power. The United States doesn't have the missile strength to last a few days. I mean, the Israeli intelligence assessment has the U.S. has 4 to 5 days of intensive bombardment of Iran, 1 week of lower intensity. Why would Trump, do you think, be seeking this war in opposition to his MAGA base if he wasn't being blackmailed? What do the Americans get out of this?
Well, you know, Clausewitz, when he wrote about war, said that war is a very serious business, and the decision to go to war is a very serious decision, and all considerations should be taken into account, etc., etc. But Trump, with Trump, my guess, I don't know, I didn't see anything about the American decision-making process that at the end of which was the tweet, we don't give up hope to the protesters in Iran, United States, or help is on the way, etc. My guess is that Trump sat at midnight or after midnight watching Fox News. He saw that all the news are about the demonstrations in Iran. Nobody speaks about Trump. So, you know, he has to join the party and to be the center of the party. So he just tweeted this tweet that help is on the way or something like this. And that's it. And this way he committed the United States. Do you know, we don't know about any normal decision-making process at the height of the demonstration that would lead to such a commitment by the United States. It just came out of the blue from one of his tweets. But once it came out, it immediately committed the United States because it is the president of the United States.
Professor Uribar Joseph, I'll stop you there. More from the Professor Emeritus of International Relations at the University of Haifa, Uribar Joseph, after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the author of Beyond the Iron Wall, The Fatal Flaw in Israel's National Security, Professor Uribar Joseph. Professor, we were talking about reasons why Trump might seek this war with Iran. I have to say, amidst the headlines here in the UAE, Iran and Russia hold maritime exercises in regional show of force. There's been huge naval drills, Iran in partnership with Russia and China. Simultaneously, the United Arab Emirates and every Arab nation has slammed the U.S. envoy's statements, it says here in Gulf News. Huckabee's claim over Israel's borders draw ire. I think many people believe that Israel's reputation around the world is at an all-time low, obviously, after Gaza, new estimates coming every day of the numbers of civilians slaughtered. What was your reaction to Mike Huckabee explaining his Greater Israel project based on theology? A perfect storm, Christian Zionism with Netanyahu, with Miriam Adelson?
Well, I must say that we had some very good, very fine ambassadors, American ambassadors in Israel, and I'm afraid that Huckabee won't be among them. His interview is messianic. There is no other word to describe it. I don't think that even Netanyahu wanted him to give such an interview, because it causes Israel troubles in the Republican party in the United States. But this is what happens when you take a messianic person and put him as an ambassador in Israel, and it describes his ideas.
Yeah, the interview, of course, with Tucker Carlson. You've said previously that Netanyahu and the right-wing coalition have not been interested in destroying Hamas previously. I mean, Ehud Barak has been on this program. He walked out. Perhaps what you've been saying about the relationship between Hamas and the right wing of Israel would suggest why he might want to do that. Barak, more known now for his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. Why is it that Netanyahu is not destroying Hamas?
Well, Netanyahu is not ready to go to a political process with the Palestinian Authority. In order to justify his approach to the political solution that everyone supports, except the extremists on the Arab or the Muslim side and the extremists on the Israeli or Jewish side and on the Christian side as well, in order to avoid this dissolution, in order to justify it, his stand, he says we have no one to speak with. In the West Bank, we have the Palestinian Authority. In Gaza, we have the Hamas. There is no one voice with whom we can negotiate. As long as there is no one voice, that is the Palestinian Authority, we cannot enter into negotiations. And in order to maintain the situation where he cannot go into negotiations, he has to maintain the power of Hamas in Gaza. Otherwise, it will be the Palestinian Authority in Gaza. And if there is a Palestinian Authority in Gaza and the West Bank, there is no obstacle to negotiations.
I don't think we can see American money again being funneled to Hamas.
We'll have to wait and see.
I was speaking with Ehud Barak, and I don't know whether you've seen these Epstein files. You're a historian of intelligence, after all, of Israel. Were you surprised that Terjrod Larsen and Mona Juul, those Norwegians that were part of the Oslo Peace Accords, they are in the Epstein files? Jeffrey Epstein left millions of dollars to the children of those Oslo Accord birth parents at the time?
I must say that I don't follow too closely the Epstein affair, and I don't know whom he hosted in his home and on his island, and whom he gave money, etc., etc. I cannot enter into this subject. I don't have any opinion about it. It is sad to see that people who we are, we respect.
You've written about these. You've written about these people, haven't you?
About the Norwegians?
No. Yeah, just in passing.
I don't remember so, but if you say, maybe. I don't know. I don't think that I wrote about them, and I don't recall the names.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's very difficult for anyone, even historians, to understand this huge dump of 3 million documents, of pages, of videos, and so on, quite apart from the sexual abuse. Going on to Iran itself and its response to what's been going on, the largest armada since 2003 from the United States. Why do you think Iran continues desperately, or is it, are there signs of desperation, to talk or to desire to talk with the United States when Trump has clearly made his views known? He's bankrolled by Miriam Adelson. They're close ties. I mean, Marco Rubio is closely associated with Israel. His son-in-law used to give up his bed for Benjamin Netanyahu. Is it a sign of desperation for all the talk from Iran that it continues to desire talks with the United States?
Well, I'll put it this way. You know that war is the realm of uncertainty, revolutionary situations, and Iran is, one way or another, is in a revolutionary situation. There might be a counter-revolution in Iran, the uprising. You take the combination of the uncertainty of war and the uncertainty of revolution, and we don't know what are the calculations, the reasoning behind Iran's stand. But my guess is that the Iranians take quite seriously Trump's threats. They see the power that is getting into the region, the preparations. And I think that they take into consideration not only the cost of war, but also the combination of the cost of war with a domestic uprising. And this is probably the most serious challenge that they faced either from 79, when Khomeini came to power, or at least from since the war with Iraq that ended in 1988. And it is a very difficult situation for them. I'm sure that they don't, there is no one voice in Iran. And now we have to see how far they are ready to go in order to avoid the war. For the time being, they played hard, but we'll have to wait and see. The cost for them might be the total cost. You know, they might lose the Iranian regime, might lose the power, which is really a big issue.
Yeah, I mean, the public talk about Trump being presented with assassination plans for Khamenei, but for all what you've said about Netanyahu seeking to stay out of prison, and we're all discussing these huge geopolitical themes because of that parochial matter, it is true that apart from the failure to defeat Ansar Allah in Yemen, Netanyahu has defeated Hezbollah, hasn't he? Islamic Jihad, the PFLP, Syria. It's one after another, hasn't it? One success after another.
Not Syria, but I think that the most important success in the war that we have since October 7th is against Hezbollah, because Hezbollah was the most important threat to Israel with its huge missile arsenal. And Israel succeeded in destroying 60, 70, 75% of this arsenal without any damage or without any major damage to Israel, which was something unthinkable before the war. So in a way, yes, Netanyahu, it's not Netanyahu, it is the Israeli army, the intelligence, the Israeli Air Force, the Mossad, you know, the beepers, all this rather sophisticated operations that crippled Hezbollah very gravely without Israel paying a major cost.
In the final minutes, though, Professor, sorry to interrupt, we're just running out of time, but has the cost, though, been the number of Israeli Jews leaving Israel? Mass emigration, as Israel is seen as a genocidal entity, is that the problem? I mean, I don't know whether asymmetric terror attacks will be on the streets of London, Paris, and Berlin in any war with Iran, because they, of course, arm Israel. Is that not the cost if the cost...
It is a cost. Most Israelis who left, I don't know if they left for good. My impression is that they didn't leave for good and they will return if, for example, in the coming elections, there will be a change in power. But again, Israel is 10 million. We have the estimates are that the official numbers are 50,000. Probably it is double or triple that number, but...
And the figures are censored now. The figures are censored now by the government.
Yeah, okay, but it is a problem. It is a major problem. Many of the Israelis who left, they continue to work in Israel online and will have to wait and see what happens. The problems of Israel are very difficult, very grave. This is one of them. Domestic problems, the tensions between left and right and the messianic and not messianic elements of the Israeli society are getting more and more extreme. We have problems, yes. Everywhere there are problems. In the United States, there are problems, but
demographically, a generation of Americans now do not favor Israel. So support from the United States will be ending, presumably, in one generation. Israel cannot survive then.
Even less than one generation, perhaps if the Democrats win the next elections in 3 years, this might be the end of a beautiful friendship.
Professor Uri Bar-Joseph, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those suffering the impact of the US-UK EU armed bombing in Gaza, Iran, and Lebanon. We'll be back on Monday with more revelations from the Epstein files following the arrest of a former UK ambassador to the USA and a senior royal family member. Over links to Epstein, we'll be speaking to a former UK crime prevention minister known for exposing establishment secrecy around the royal family. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.